right, we are now on the record. Franco, oh, I think I just pressed the panic button by accident. That's good. You see a bunch of marshals running in. We're okay. All right. I did press it. No, I pressed it. All right, 69098. This is Franco versus Franco. We'll begin with the appellant. And make sure for the record that each one of you state your name for my court clerk. Thank you so much. Oh, also, appellant, would you like 5 minutes of rebuttal time?
Could I have 3 minutes, please?
You may.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Emily Buckwald with Peace and Lily Bites, appearing pro bono on behalf of appellant Rigoberto Franco, who's here in the courtroom. We were able to resolve some of the issues related to custody, visitation, and spousal support. So we're here today because the district court abused its discretion when it made decisions based on a record that was so sparse it could not contain the necessary findings. The district court abused its discretion by first awarding an upward deviation in child support without the necessary showing of special circumstances, awarding respondent Gabriela Franco attorney fees without the proper legal basis or necessary analysis for the amount of fees, and dividing the party's community property without making the findings necessary to show that the division was equitable.
Ms. Buckwell, you said you resolved some of these issues?
Correct.
So is the appeal different now than what we have been looking at?
No,
the
briefing was final. It was submitted after we were able to resolve some of the issues. So the issues in the briefing are the ones that are still
open. So these are all right in front of us.
Correct.
Thank you.
With the attorney's fees issues, Gabriela testified that her bill was like $10,000 in attorney's fees. If we did remand it back, if we just look at Miller versus Wilfong, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be enough for other evidence besides affidavits in support of fees? I mean, her testimony is evidence.
Correct, but I think that what's lacking in the record is the true analysis of the factors under Brunzell. And that's not to diminish the good work that counsel did at the district court level, but really there needs to be kind of a full reviewing of whether the work was actually completed, whether the complexity of the work and the value and the reasonableness of the rate of the counsel.
Does this happen a lot in the Eighth? It seems like it does, that they just say Brunzell, and then nobody, you know, having been a 7-year district court judge and pouring through attorney's fee records all the time and looking at them to see if the work is complete, like you say, or what work was actually done.
I can only speak for this case, and really it's just kind of a cursory invocation of Brunzell. I know I clerked at the district court level as well, and I spent many hours looking at those.
Who did you clerk for?
Judge Al.
Right. Yes. So you know exactly what I'm talking about when there's a motion on the word of attorney's fees and going through Brunzell.
Absolutely.
Look, why is this different here in family court?
I'm honestly not sure, and I can't speak to the minds of the judges.
Maybe a respondent can tell us.
Every time I speak at a family law conference, I recommend that lawyers have their Brunzell affidavit prepared, a standard affidavit, and courts have a standard standard order that has the factors, and they just fill in a few facts and they're done.
I agree completely. I think that it's, to be candid, it's not a difficult task, and it's really just about having that careful analysis. And that analysis just isn't present in this record.
Does it make any difference, though, that part of these fees were awarded for contempt?
So whether there's two steps to award attorney's fees, whether or not there's a legal basis for awarding fees, and the judges do have discretion to award fees for things like non-compliance with orders, but then there is that second step of Brunzell and whether or not the fees are reasonable and appropriate.
So it makes no difference in your mind that part of the fees were for contempt, even though the judge said, according to the order, that he was punishing your client.
Well, I mean, with all, I don't believe that attorney's fees should be punishment. And even if they are for non-compliance with orders, I do think that there needs to be the second step of the test, which is the...
But why? I mean, I think this is Judge Gibbons' question, all right? Granted, you know, maybe attorney's fees, the Barzell findings aren't great, but the judge could have done the same thing just by saying, you're in contempt of court, I'm going to fine you, and he could have made up a number, $1,000. So if that's an alternative basis for the award in this case, why does it matter if the findings are there or not, if the judge was required to make no findings and a contempt order?
Well, if the judge had made a contempt order, then we would...
This wasn't a contempt order. This was for fees after trial.
When he filed a motion, there was two different awards of fees. The first one was the $2,000 on the contempt motion, and then there was the $3,000 at the end of the trial for the total circumstances under the Sargent case.
Yes.
And the $2,000 was not appealed, but the $3,000 was appealed.
The full $5,000 was appealed because there wasn't the appropriate basis for either of them. And so regardless of why they were awarded, the full process for awarding of attorney's fees in a family law case was not completed. Judge Silver mentioned Will Fong, and really there does have to be true evidence supported provided to support the award of attorney's fees.
So how is this going to help your client if, in fact, you're correct and this is remanded? Can't the judge just take the exact same order, add in a few factors under Prenzel and the facts and say fees are the same?
Or do they have to have had, which here it's lacking, affidavit?
So I think that that's something that we would have to deal with. And that is a risk, right? That this will just go back to the district court and there will be still an award of fees. The district court has an obligation to comply with the process, and that process wasn't met here in the court.
Is there any type of stay granted on payment of the fees pending appeal?
No.
Because I believe the judge ordered $100 a month or something like that to pay it.
And I don't believe my client has paid.
Or the child support. I hope he's paying the child support.
He is paying the child support and the spousal support. But a good deviation to child support, because the court improperly awarded an upward deviation of child support, under the statute, Rigoberto, as the non-custodial parent of two children, is obligated to pay Gabriella 25% of his gross monthly income for his child's care, which, based on the court's finding that his gross monthly income was $3,297, and that was based on an evaluation of his pay stubs, the court did award an upward deviation to $1,000 based on, quote, the relative income of the parties, the value of services provided by each, and the amount of time the children spend with each parent.
Aren't those all factors in the statute?
They are. But I think that the court needs to do more than just simply recite the factors in the statute. Under Jackson versus Jackson, there needs to be specific findings of fact to justify the special circumstances that award the deviation from the statutory amount. And if you do kind of look at the facts behind these recitation of elements, although Rigoberto does make more than Gabriella, Gabriella does have an income, and the court found that she should be able to work more hours to provide more income for her family. As to the value of services provided by each and the amount of time the children spend with each parent,
some of these things, I mean, granted, the district court's specific order isn't all the detail, but some of these things are things that we know and are in dispute, right? Based on the relative income of the parties, well, she made findings, you know, that the father's income was $3,297. I mean, they're in the record, just not in that sentence. The amount of time the children spend with each parent, well, that's subject to court order. And even though it's not in that sentence, it's in the record. So why isn't the totality of the record enough to support these factors?
Well, I think that the evidence to support these really doesn't go to support the upward deviation. Child custody necessarily contemplates one parent having primary custody and the other parent having non-primary custody. And there aren't those specific findings that would allow for the upward deviation. And I think the other concern is that the district court didn't consider other factors that were factors in 125B080. Specifically, Rigoberto was ordered to provide health care for the children, which is one of the factors that's listed to either deviate upward or downward in the child support amount.
How about the alimony? Does that factor into this at all?
I think that those are kind of separate issues. She was originally awarded, I believe, $800 a month for an alimony. We were able to negotiate that downward just a little bit.
I'm just curious as to why that wasn't appealed.
It was one of the issues that was included on the appeal. We took part in one of the court ordered settlement conferences, and we were able
to. And that was resolved, okay.
Yes.
That makes sense, okay.
Yes.
And then the briefing, all right.
Exactly.
Good thing it was settled, huh?
Do you have to ask the district court to approve that settlement, though, before it's actually changed?
So we did file a request for certification under Honeycutt and Dingwall, and to be candid, I don't believe that it has been signed yet. I'm not sure. Neither the case nor I represent.
What if the district court rejects it? Now you've waived it.
Now you...
We've been able to, the parties have agreed, and so I would hope that the district court would approve this. The parties' relationship has improved.
Maybe it could read it.
We've had a number of cases where the Honeycutt procedure hasn't been followed exactly correctly, and that's why we're bringing this up, because there could be a problem.
Hopefully there won't be. So going back just very briefly to the attorney's fees, one of the things that the district court did say at the related to the award of $3,000 was this was a sergeant case. And basically, sergeant case is one where the court can award attorney's fees to the higher income party in support. But really the purpose of certain attorney's fees and the sergeant is so that the less affluent spouse can meet the other spouse on equal footing. Here,
that's the first part of Sergeant Bill. That's the pre-trial fees. The court here ordered the fees at trial when looking at the entire situation. So they've already had the trial.
Correct.
Sergeant looks very applicable here to me.
Well, while Rigoberto does have a higher income than Gabriella, really, I think that there are other factors that we do need to consider when applying Sergeant, namely that Rigoberto went without counsel, and the difference in...
Didn't you originally have counsel, though? So, what if somebody said, get rid of your counsel, then you won't have to pay fees. She had already went and hired counsel.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a consideration, but that's not the case here. His counsel represented him in an unbundled capacity, and when he wasn't able to find
it. Real quick on the property issues, because you haven't mentioned them.
Yes.
I know you want the rebuttal time, so you need to at least mention it so you can talk about that
yes.
rebuttal if need be.
Correct. Basically, the record is very sparse as to finding as far as the assets and the value of the assets and the debts. Therefore, it's impossible for the court to divide the property equitably. Really, the court doesn't have to find it divided evenly, it has to be equitably, and because the record is so sparse, it's impossible for the court to have divided it equitably.
Okay, now 2 minutes and 30 seconds, pretty close to 3 minutes. Thank you. We'll hear from respondent.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Carly Sansom of Pecos Law Group, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Gabriella Franca, who's present today. Our position is that the district court did not abuse its discretion on these issues because it did make findings, and where it did not make findings, the evidence in the record supported its decision. This is regarding the upward deviation of child support, the award of $5,000 in attorney's fees, and the distribution of marital property and debt.
She focused on the quality of the findings, but let me throw some numbers at you. The district court found that the father's monthly income is $3,297 a month, then gave $800 a month in alimony plus child support, $100,000 a month. That's 54% of his monthly income that he has to give to his to the mom. And if you calculate that leaves him with a net income for the year of $17,000, which is $1,000 above the poverty line. How is that good for the child to have the father essentially living at poverty level?
Well, Your Honor, you do raise that is a good question. Specifically with Rigoberto, his income had been all over the place throughout the hearings and the trial. The district court had found that he was dishonest on both of his financial disclosure forms, understating it to such a gross amount that he had put in one of them that he made like about $1,200 a month. At one point, his paycheck stubs showed that he made over $4,500 per month. At trial, the judge did end up deciding and making the finding that the income was $3,297 per month. But as you can see, the income was all over the place. And in fact, his pay stubs only accounted for his claimed hits, whereas he is a dealer. And there, I think it is common knowledge that a lot of the time, service industry employees make more than what is disclosed on their pay stubs and their tax returns. Also, going to the attorney's fees questions that you were raising with opposing counsel.
And I hate to barge in, but we've all been district court judges. We've all poured through those records. And what is going on in family court that you can go, brings out, and then it's okay? If you're the losing party, how fair is that when the judge doesn't even accept any evidence or look at anything, reviews nothing? Looks like it's almost an afterthought, like it's sanctioning him for going to trial.
Of course.
And basically says, okay, 10,000, she says, and then, and where do these numbers come from? How do we review it as an appellate court? I know, but I just don't understand it. Having done civil work, which this is civil work, you have attorney's fees, how does a district court judge do this and just throw out a number and say, runs out?
Well, Your Honor, the family court, it is a very small circle between the judges and all the attorneys. There's attorneys in Nevada, and then there's family attorneys. And
maybe it shouldn't be like that. They still have to answer to the rules and the law.
I agree, Your Honor, and I do think it would be best to have all the factors considered and put on the record. However, trial counsel has actually been practicing in this area for 30, 40 years, and I would hope that the judge, when making those findings and saying that it was in accordance with Renzel, was possibly taking into account the fact that she was very familiar with trial counsel and the type of work that he performs, how long he's been practicing, all of that.
But how much real time did they put into it? How would you know that without an affidavit or some billing records to show there's 10 hours, there's 100 hours? How do you know what they've done for that amount?
And, there is no way to actually know without an affidavit, so that is true. However, Gabriella did testify that she had spent over $13,000. She was under oath when she said that.
Except for, are we to just pay out as district court judges? We're just like, well, whatever the attorney charges, then the losing side has to pay that number. It may or may not be reasonable.
Well, actually, the amount that was awarded, only $3,000 was awarded at trial when she had spent over $13,000 prior to trial. And then on top of that, too, $13,000 is a conservative number for a trial on custody, debts, assets, alimony.
We're not saying that, but as an appellate court, we make law for the entire state. If we allow a district court to say Brenzel and snap their fingers and come up with any number, aren't we saying that anything goes? We're not saying that in this case, maybe that is reasonable. But as a reviewing court, how do we know it was reasonable without something more to the district court? That there's a reason why there's Brenzel. It's not like it's a fake case. It's out there. It's been there for years.
Of course.
Decades.
And yet family court doesn't seem to follow the law.
I do understand, and I think it does make it very difficult as appellate judges to make that decision without something, an affidavit or something to look at. So I do understand and I do agree that it does make it challenging.
I guess you're going to make a form affidavit and talk to the rest of the people in the locker room as soon as you go back, right?
Of course, and it is customary. My boss has me do that in all of my motions and everything I file, so he does have me doing that to try to make that easier on the appellate judges.
How often do you get to talk about yourself and say how great you are, and that's what the rule requires?
I will say writing it is quite awkward, but... what I was going to say is that with the attorney's fees and also with the other issues, even if the court determines that the findings are insufficient, then a remand is just appropriate to allow the district court to set out those specific findings. But our position is that the evidence in the record does support each of these issues and the way the judge ruled on those issues. For example, with child support, the judge cited the relative income of the parties, the value of the services provided by each party, and then the amount, amount of time that the children spend with each parent. Going to the relative income, there's no question that the incomes are quite different. And even for Gabriella, she did testify that she would be working approximately 20 hours per week after the litigation ended. She is also raising two children, essentially almost completely on her own. One of the children she has 5 days a week. The other child has complete teenage discretion because of the father's actions in the past. So the relative income of the parties is definitely quite different. Also, the value of the services provided by each party. Rigoberto testified that he was the primary breadwinner all throughout the marriage. She was just she was a housewife, so she didn't actually acquire the same skills. And she also testified to that fact that she didn't acquire any special skills during the marriage. So it does support that the value of her services as homemaker and housewife warranted an upward deviation. Also, the amount of time the children spend with each parent. As I said, Gabriella has one of the children 5 days a week, and then the other child essentially all of the time unless the child decides to go see her father. So all of those factors help support the judge's upward deviation. As for the attorney's fees, the initial $2,000 is completely justified because of the order to show cause. With that, Gabriella requested her attorney's fees in her motion filed June 19th for Rigoberto violating those orders. In the order to show cause filed June 30th, the district court affirmed that it would award attorney's fees if it found Rigoberto in contempt. And then later, at the order to show cause hearing, the court, in fact, found him in contempt and then awarded the $2,000 in attorney's fees as it said that it would. Also, at the trial, the district court found that it awarded the additional $3,000 in fees based on Rigoberto's actions in the case. He did do quite a few things to worsen the litigation and to increase Gabriella's attorney's fees. Also, finding that it was appropriate under Sargent, given the disparity in the income. Again, it didn't really matter that Rigoberto wasn't worth $3 million. His earning capacity was so much greater than Gabriella's, and so it was appropriate under Sargent. Again, they testified that Gabriella was a stay-at-home mom. Rigoberto earned all the money during marriage, was the primary breadwinner, furthered his career, took classes, all of that.
What do you have to say about the community property division and their arguments with that?
Of course. Actually, Your Honor, that one, is, in my opinion, is probably the most clear in the testimony that was given.
My first question on that is, was there a balance sheet that showed all the property and the approximate values?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that there was a balance sheet. I don't recall.
Is it in the financial disclosure form, the declaration?
In the financial disclosure forms, though, they did disclose the marital property. And in fact, in Rigoberto's financial disclosure form, he actually said that the home was worth negative $15,000. Mm-hmm. And then he went on during his testimony to say that she could have the home. He also said she could have everything in the home. He said she could have the car and any equity in the car.
Well, he kind of sunk himself. But isn't the starting point for a trial you list all the property and whether it's community or separate and what the approximate values are, and if one side thinks it's different, you list both?
Yeah, and generally that's done in their financial disclosure forms, any of the property that's at issue. Generally, personal property, if the parties can't agree how to distribute it in a family court case, they do what's called an AV list, where one party makes a list, two lists basically, and the other party gets to choose whatever list they want to keep. That's very typical in family court cases.
But don't you still consider valuations? I mean, why, this record seems to be very deficient on determining the valuations, and that's what appellant is claiming, why a remand is needed.
And that is what they're claiming. However, our position again is, even if this had all been in the record, he still said that she could keep it.
He testified that she could keep it if she took the mortgage, but the district judge appeared to give her the house to leave him on the mortgage, so he essentially has to pay for a house that he's not even living in. So why isn't that an offset because she gets a free place to live and he's responsible for the mortgage?
And, Your Honor, maybe that would be something that the district court would need to clean up just to show that some type of refinance or something would be appropriate, because I do know that she is responsible for the mortgage payment. She's making the mortgage payment. So it's not like, you know, he's still making the mortgage payment or anything.
Right,
like
but if she chooses not to, if his name's on the mortgage, then he's on the hook for it. He can be sued for it even though he doesn't even live in the house anymore.
And that is a really big problem in family court cases when two spouses divorce and, for example, the less affluent spouse stays in the home and can't afford to refinance but can afford the mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. It is a big problem not being able to get the other spouse off of the loan. That is a big problem you see pretty frequently, actually. Mm-hmm.
So he said, you can have the house, you know, that's fine, but he wanted it to be refinanced. I mean, I've never heard of a case before where the judge said no, and it's just indefinite.
I have seen it before, but I do sympathize with that, because keeping your name on a mortgage does make it challenging to get a new mortgage.
I mean, maybe
what is she doing now?
Years.
How would she even refi? How could she, if she doesn't, maybe works 20 hours a week and takes care of two kids, how would she even refi? She'd lose the house anyway.
I don't know that she'd be able to refinance.
Right. I mean, is there 5 years left on the mortgage? 20? 25?
I want to say it's upwards, closer to 20. So it's, you know, quite a few years. And again, you know, in awarding her the house, maybe that's something that the district court judge could have put on the record, that refinancing in a certain number of years would be appropriate.
It makes us make more sense of what happened down there.
Of course. But again, giving her the house and the negative equity in the house, that was something that he said that he was okay with. In fact, he even said that he wanted his children to be able to stay in their house and have that stability. So
it was negative equity?
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor.
Wasn't there some testimony that he thought it had a positive equity?
There may have been something, but I know that in his financial disclosure form, he said the value is negative $15,000, and that is under oath.
So. Let me follow up on that, because I noticed that, too. It appears that the value of the house wasn't entirely clear, so why didn't the district order an appraisal as opposed to just relying on, you know, the father's guess as to what it's worth?
And generally, the district courts will allow parties, if they don't have a disagreement as to the value or as to the net equity or anything like that, district courts will take their testimony for what
it's worth. And she said it was underwater, too. Too, as well,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Who knows now? It might be exactly.
Yeah, it
might be different right now.
Hopefully, it's gone up, but I'm not sure. But that was one of the considerations that the district court was able to take into account. I believe I said it with the vehicle. He said that she could keep the vehicle and any equity that was in the vehicle. Also with the guns are something that were raised on appeal. Gabriella testified during the trial that the guns were purchased during marriage. Rigoberto claimed that they were separate property, but he never provided any proof to the court. It was his burden to prove that they were separate property, but he never provided any proof to the court. And in fact, at the trial, he said that he didn't bring the proof with him. So that was kind of his chance to show, hey, these are my separate property, and that never happened.
If there's two guns, how come he didn't get one and she didn't get one?
He did
some gift cards for some guns?
Yeah, he got the gift cards, and the judge did say...
$100 in gift cards for guns?
Yeah, I don't know the exact value of the guns. I'm not specialized in that area, but the judge did say that if the parties wanted to exchange them, they could, but just split the property up that way.
Did he get his gold ring back?
I believe the gold ring, she didn't have the gold ring and didn't know where it was or anything like that.
She couldn't find it.
But the court said that if it was ever found, it should be returned, and I'm sure that she will stick to her word on that. Okay, Your Honors, I see that I am out of time. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll hear from appellant then for 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think that what this hearing has shown, that there are a lot of questions remaining about what went on at the district court level. I had the chance to look back at both parties' pretrial disclosures, neither of which included kind of the balance sheet that would go to show what the value of the the assets and the debts were. And Mr. Rigoberto did specifically request to be removed from the mortgage, and that was denied by the district court. Going back, counsel focused on the Rigoberto's previous misstatements about his financial condition on previous disclosure statements. But really, the district court found that his income was $3,297 a month, and that's what the child support has to be based on. Judge Kemmer made a very good point that this was 54% of his gross monthly income, which is a substantial portion of his income. And while he is committed to providing for his family, that is just too high. Again, as to the attorney's fees, and again, not to downplay the good work done at the district court level and his excellent reputation within the community, there needs to be more than that. And Brunzel exists for a reason. There are factors for a reason. And there needs to be that careful contemplation. And here in a family court case, that standard is even higher, requiring evidence as to all of those factors. And again, that's just not present in the record. So in conclusion, we ask this court to remand the case back down to the district court to make the necessary findings, because the district court abused its discretion when it failed to carefully consider all of these factors.
Thank you very much.